I just want to say right off the bat that today is one of those bucket list shows. Today, we chat with Johnny Marr, who plays at the Roseland this coming Saturday, September 22nd. Today, we discuss his connection with Portland and broach some of the topics from his 2016 biography, Set the Boy Free. You know, one of the more memorable passages in the book for me was when Johnny chose to become a Manchester City fan as a young boy instead of, that other team. Absolutely glorious. I'm Gregory Day. You're listening to PDXPodcast.com. Let's connect via telephone with Johnny right now in Manchester, home of the greatest soccer team in the world, managed by Pep Guardiola. Just saying.
Hi, Gregory.
Hi. Hello from Portland, your old stomping grounds.
Well, how is it there? Is it fun?
It's always fun. You know that.
Yeah. Are you from Portland?
I'm from Audenshaw, really close to Manchester.
Yeah. Wow. How long have you been in Portland?
I think since, 2000? So long, long time. Long, long time in the States. I've lost my Mancunian accent. It's terrible.
A little bit. Yeah, I can hear some Audenshaw in there, though. Oh, well, yeah, I miss Portland. I'm looking forward to going back.
I could tell from reading your book you have very fond memories here. We're thrilled to have you.
Sure. It's exciting playing the shows anyway, but the band feel like are really into it. The band, so we're all really into it because the new songs are such fun to play, and the reaction to the album's been so positive, and we did a run of shows, started around the world in May this year, and at that time the Call the Comet wasn't actually released yet, and
right.
Everybody took it, so it can be a little nervy playing to audiences who haven't heard the songs, and it was great. The show, we feel the show hangs together really well, and it's we're all excited about being the new thing. But now now the record's out, it should be even better because people know the material now.
Oh yes,
we're excited.
And the album starts with a bang, Rise, a great vocal performance on that track. My favorite was My Eternal, because it's very danceable and very goth, which I loved. It's just fantastic work. That's just a wonderful song. And were you going for a certain sound with that one?
Well, with My Eternal, it came about because I was playing the synth riff on a lonely, bleak night in wintry Manchester.
There you go.
In my studio, which is located at the top of a factory, and the whole thing came together pretty quickly because it suggested a kind of a bad dream, really. The music suggested some weird dream and this feeling of being pursued. So I wanted to try and make the song that felt like one of those weird, disconcerting dreams. And I banged it down pretty quick. I just followed inspiration. And it was actually my co-producer, Dobiak, who came in the next day and just said we should finish it because no one else sings like that. But he just really knows me as a singer and a guitar player, so he doesn't really suffer too much from history baggage, and he was like, look, there's no one else around singing like that, and that made me a little nervous, but he encouraged me to finish the song the next day simply because of the vocal part. And when it was time to choose all the songs on the record, I chose it really for that reason, because it's kind of a unique at the moment. Not many people sort of I can't think of anyone else who sounds like that, and that makes me kind of proud. Always good to get in touch with your inner goth.
Well, you're in the right place, Manchester.
Sure, yeah, in the bleak winter time.
Don't I know it. Now, The Guardian, your hometown paper, loves this album. I don't know if you read your reviews, but it got a glowing review in The Guardian, so that must feel fantastic.
Yeah, the response has been pretty positive all around. I don't get too focused on you know, the press or anything like that. But I sort of wore off a long time ago. But obviously, it's very gratifying that people get it. You know, and because I feel it's the best one. I really am proud of the first two.
Don't you always feel like it's your best one? I mean, after you're done.
Very quickly afterwards, you start to wonder. But
yes.
With what I'm doing now, so much about the solo records is playing shows. It's always been that way. The idea of going out and the idea of concerts kind of informed a lot of my decision to make solo records. Anyway, putting my new band together came off the back of being in Portland with Modest Mouse, and then a few years around Europe with the Cribs. So I was playing and touring all the time, and you know, I was able to remember the audience's faces when I started writing the new solo stuff. And a lot of the first solo record was written in dressing rooms and on tour buses and around all the cities that I was visiting over that big period of touring. So what I'm doing now is really kind of has to live on the stage, which may sound obvious, but you can have whole chunks of your career that without that consideration, and more about just recording and how it sounds as a record, and you know, that's fine
like
too.
The Beatles.
What I did quite a lot in the late 90s and early 2000s, and that was cool. I was into that. But the songs are almost every song that I do on the solo record has to really work in concert now. And as I say, that may sound obvious, but it isn't always the case. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do all kinds of different things. So it's very much a live group, and I would go crazy if I couldn't take these songs out on the road now and do what I do on stage. And it wasn't always that way for me for many, many years.
Right. No, I remember you saying that in your last podcast interview. You spent a lot of time in Portland, 4 years, big part of your life here. And, you know, reading your book, I could tell you were very impressed with Isaac Brock, his lyrics, and you really connected with the band. I loved reading those passages because it felt like, you know, you were just a bunch of guys on a tour bus having a lot of fun, and yeah, you kind of had to tell them off a little bit, but I laughed at that too.
Well, my time in Modest Mouse was completely synonymous with Portland as a city. The decision to be in the band and continue writing songs was as much about the place and the situation as the music, and certainly more than any kind of career decision or option. It just happened that from the very first night I got there, inspiration struck particularly between me and Isaac, and then all of the band. And I was out every morning, having just arrived from the UK, completely jet lagged, and running around the city and over the bridges and around the southeast and downtown along the river and all of that every morning, having been up late in the evening writing a new kind of music with great new people. And and 4 or 5 days into that period, I remember looking around and being downtown before the place opened up, and
yes.
and thinking to myself, I love this place, I'm going to stay and get my family over here. And it was very, very exciting time for me. I couldn't wait to get into the studio each day and get to know those guys more. And we were all really excited about the album that turned out to be We Were Dead Before the Ship Even Sank. We knew we were onto something really good. And one of the things I like to think that I brought to the band was my experience of having been doing what I do for so long, means that I know when, aside from what I do on the guitar as a musician, I know when the chemistry is good.
Yes.
I've been very fortunate to be in some in bands with when the chemistry's been very good, and I recognise that straight away with that particular group of individuals, Joe and Eric and Jeremiah and Isaac, and then Isaac and I struck up a very quick and inspired musical partnership. Mm-hmm. That's why I stuck around for 4 years. Fell in love with the place, fell in love with the music. That's why I always say it was the best time of my life.
Yes, you write about that in the book. You talk about chemistry. You write about that also, that you started laughing uncontrollably when, you know, you and the Smiths finally started playing together. It's fantastic. One thing I really got from reading your book, the most important thing that sticks with me, is that you have an incredible memory.
I've always had a really good memory. It might be because I've been having to explain myself so much for 30 years. You
right.
Kind of get pretty good at it. But
even remember the clothes you were wearing when you knocked on Morrissey's door for the first time.
Oh, sure, yeah, these things are really important. I can probably remember what clothes I was wearing when I turned up in Portland, or when I arrived in East London to on the first day of working with Other. These things are very
really?
Important.
Really?
How yeah.
about that? Now, my favorite part of the book was when you chose to be a Manchester City fan, in spite of everybody thinking that, you know, you should support United.
Well, hey, it only took 40 years to pay off.
Yes, and speaking of which...
Who's laughing now?
Exactly. Speaking of which, you write about meeting Liam Gallagher, the Mr. Haircut, in your book, it's a very funny passage about a fish.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Fish, yeah. Well, I think the very first words he ever uttered to me were just full of attitude. So
what a surprise.
Nothing much has changed there, except perhaps that he's now a middle-aged man.
Well, you know, I'm really proud that really proud of you that you managed to not grow a beard in the 4 years that you lived here. I know the British press sort of gave you a bit of slack about joining an American band with beards, but there you go.
I have to be honest, Gregory. As much as it broke my heart to leave Portland, the beard. Situation. The beard and accordion situation was really getting close to crisis point. I felt like I knew that I was going to make the first solo record in 2011, and I just had this strange premonition of me sat on the cover of the record being a picture of me sat in a glade somewhere with an accordion and a pipe and some kind of old time.
I'd love to see that.
Some crazy old time boots going on and a rocking chair. I mean, no one needs to see me in that situation.
One of the most touching moments. That's funny, but one of the most. I'm going to wrap it up here really quick.
It's okay. You can talk amongst them.
Oh, great. One of the most touching moments in your book was meeting Paul McCartney. He was starstruck, and I really got that sense of that from you, and what he said to you, that's Ben's fear about having trouble with Ben's. That was great.
Yeah, what are you saying? He was starstruck.
No, you were. You were 24. You met Paul McCartney. I don't know how that even happened. How did that come to be? How'd you meet this?
How it happened? Well, he called me up. You know, the Smith split had been announced literally 15 minutes before on the radio, and in that 15 minutes, when it was announced, and became really very real to me, I had genuine visions of moving back into my parents' house and possibly getting a straight job, because hearing it on the radio really was a bit of a moment.
Yes.
And then maybe by 15 minutes later, I got a call from Paul McCartney's office, maybe even 12 minutes. It didn't take him very long to get my number. I guess he's kind of got some resources in that department. And I really wasn't expecting, when the band split, I really wasn't expecting to get that call or for any of this stuff to happen the way it did, the way all of this stuff sort of transpired quite quickly after that. I was looking at the prospect of, a more uneventful life, but still as a musician, obviously, because I've been a musician from being a little boy. There was never any doubt.
Right.
It was just at what level I was gonna play. But yeah, so I've been very fortunate and in the leaving some things up to fate, but just following my musical instincts. As I did when I went over to Portland in 2005 to walk into a room with a whole bunch of strangers and put in my guitar and play. I never have any make any assumptions about that situation. And I didn't even when I was I didn't even as a 14-year-old.
Right. You know, people love your guitar, by the way. I've been reading a lot about this guitar. The Fender Johnny Marr Jaguar tone is out of this world. People love the fat vintage profile. You got rid of the crappy, the problematic switching system and the selector.
They were crappy, all right.
Yes.
Well, I'm very, very proud of it. It's probably my proudest achievement, that guitar.
Yeah.
Well, maybe my children. Maybe the guitar. No, fuck it. Yeah, it's the guitar.
By the way, you went to Elvis's house, and there's a very funny passage in the book where you called your wife and you sung a song to her, an Elvis song.
I sung Are You Lonesome Tonight to
yes.
my wife whilst I was sitting on the porch of Elvis's house. I sang the whole song. Are you lonesome tonight? Oh, I was nearly going to sing the whole song to you then. Angie's never been the biggest fan of Elvis. But it was such a magical moment. I was sat on the porch, thought, wow, this is what a better thing to do to sing down the phone to my sweetheart. But when it was over, she just said, you are such a dick. And
it's great.
She's still not very impressed.
Another revelation in this book, the Smiths were almost called the Walking Wounded. That would have been interesting.
That's right. It
could have set you in a completely different direction, you think? I mean, that's kind of a...
Yeah, we would have had to move to Leeds. and deal with all of that business.
Right. Andrew Eldritch may be giving you a call. There you go. Really quick, just want to talk a little bit about your previous two albums, Playland and The Messenger. I hope we're going to hear The Messenger live, because it's probably my favorite track of all time by you.
Oh, that's amazing. No one's ever said that to me before. That's great. Thanks.
It's beautiful.
I appreciate that. I love that song. Have you got kids?
I don't, no.
Oh, right. Okay.
Is it about kids?
The song's kind of about... Well, it's not... No, it's not actually about kids. It's just it's about... when you know... It's a simple song, but it's quite obvious when you know what it is. It's just about a thing where you
pass on.
When it's no fun telling someone who you love what they don't want to hear, and it's about putting your head in the lion's mouth as an act of unconditional love. Hmm. You know, don't shoot the messenger.
Right.
That's the vibe.
No, I read the lyrics. I didn't get that, but okay.
Yeah.
Now I know.
Yeah.
And this tension from Playland, also another favorite.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's got a great atmosphere, that song.
It does.
That's one of my favorites, this tension.
Last question. I want to talk a little bit about psychedelics. There's sort of a scientific revolution going on in the United States. I don't know about the UK. There's a best-selling book, How to Change Your Mind, out there. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, I've always... had an interest in psychedelics for a fairly valid and almost noble, albeit private, reasons. One of the reasons why one of the things that most one of the reasons why I related to music so much as a kid was that when it hit me, it helped to explain a feeling that I've always had about there being something going on other beyond our five senses.
Right, absolutely.
I don't know why I had that, but I just always did, and music really satisfied that, because it seemed to be able to express the inexpressible and or unexpressible, I know it's a big subject, but I just don't believe that the regular cognitive intelligence of a human being is the sum total of consciousness and wisdom, knowledge. Far from it.
Right.
You know, whether we get into metaphysics or you get into subatomic physics, we're now getting around. Well, in the last 20, 30 years, science itself is coming round to proving its own fallibility and its own arrogance and own shortcomings.
Right. You know,
people like Rupert Sheldrake and whether it's the mystics or Clarence McKenna or
you're well read on the subject.
I've got an interest in it, and I know from personal experience that it's worth exploring.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite at home with psychedelics. Yeah.
Right. Thank you for that, and we'll see you at the Roseland September 22nd. Really looking forward to it. You're a hero of mine.
Thank you, Gregory. Thank you very much, man.
It was great to connect with you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
That's all right. Lovely to talk to you. Take care, man.
All right, cheers. Today's show was produced and edited by Gregory Day. That's me. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can reach me at greg@pdxpodcast.com. In our next episode, we're going to be talking with Jim Kerr of Simple Minds. Can't wait for that, and I hope you'll join us. In the meantime, have a great week.